like to say thank you to Paul for inviting me here and for facilitating all the poets and all the readings every Monday night. Without him, we wouldn't have a voice of poets. I suppose it's appropriate that I begin with the very first poem I ever had published. And it's set in Killarnon, my hometown, the view out the window of the library, and, well, I let it stand on its own 2 feet. The square. The square is best when framed as from an upstairs window. I could move among those down there, but that would give me less power. From here, I am the artist, puppet master. Over here, we have two at a table, all fangs and coffee cups, mobile phones and attitude. I would switch them off, let them stew for a while. I will show them tough. On the left, the mortals on the roundabout. I have paused them there for the moment, and I will keep them there and let them even feel useful until I need them. Look there, a woman, walking, rushing a little. Is that her lip trembling? She's at the end now, ready to escape, to walk away. Oh well, I will let her go. A man and his dog. I will let them be, they can take care of each other. But those infernal pigeons near the tree, always muttering to themselves and scrounging. That's the tree that arrived overnight, fully grown. Fully grown, I ask you, we'll have no more of that. I mean, if we are life fully grown, where would we be for souls, or a history, or a future? Well, now I will turn the roundabout back on, even wind it backwards a little first, to allow them some deja vu. Will they notice? They will, but they can't be certain, unless I allow them to compare notes. I'll decide later. Now, what to do with the two at the table? Did you forget them? I didn't. They're like lost souls, still talking tough. They don't realize they're merely repeating what they said a few moments ago. Should I give them a chance? Maybe I should light a candle for them. I imagine you believe that I am without conscience. In fact, when you consider, I am no worse than any artist. There, you have the picture. Who would you rather be? That's the first poem I had published, and it was published in the shop. And like tonight, I made a small mistake with my name. They published it under the name of Kevin Graham. Now, I know Kevin Graham is a good poet. He's not. Well. Now, I do a little bit of experimenting, and some poems have arrived late at night when I'm half asleep, having imbibed a glass or two of wine. This one arrived in such a way. It's called Paragliding. Paragliding again the other night. My wife blamed the cheese. A smoked Stilton Blue. It seemed, I said quite casually, come on, my dear, just slip in. Not quite the right word for paragliding, but it did convey a sense of calm. It would appear she declined, and I was left alone with a sense of silkiness that smelled of talcum. Someone was puffing great pink clouds, and I had no choice but to glide through. In the morning, fresh, fragrant hail danced against her window. I will go south next week. Now, only going to say good clapping, the best is yet to come. But that said, I get a lot of poetry from Rossbury, my favourite place. I love to run there. The other day I was running barefoot and hit some hard ground, and I found out what coccyx means. Sand sculpture. All his life he had conceived her. Now he was giving her birth. Grain by golden grain she grew. 7 times in all he changed her shape and pose until she pleased. 7 times 7 he changed her smile during that long day. Her hair, soft of sand and salt, shone in the fitful sun. A torque of gold and jewels history might have left in the sand graced her neck. Her nakedness he covered with a cloak, graced with silver spirals and a brooch of the old design. He left, and the first waves apologized at his feet, and the water lapped at her back to give her another history. Now, I do like traveling, and would you believe I'm retired 10 years, but my own school, old school, invite me back to go on the school tour every year, for some reason or another. We were in Rome last year, and I have a poem that ran about that, but this one is from Paris. It's called Stamping O'Hara. Paris again, that beaming and tormented city, resplendent as a peacock that spring afternoon. First to Notre Dame, I thought of the Bible. Could you not pray or turn your mind even for a moment? Après cela, it was over to Shakespeare and Company. Time to be the flaneur. Amble past the pigeons, the sparrows, by the statue of Charlemagne, frowning the frown of kings, weeping bronze. Cross the half river, the brows where real browsing is. Stand for a moment out of reverence for the ghosts. Now to the poetry. Time has stopped. A ghost put O'Hara in my hand, in perpetuum. And yes, it did have the day Lady died, if that. Would you like the bard? The man at the checkout asked. I left with a stamp, dark and the white of the title page. Outside, sunshine and the rest of Paris. This is a sort of a recent one, and I'll just tell you about it. I wrote it without any uppercase, or without any punctuation, and I changed it very little. I sent it to Carol Baldock, who published it in Orbis a couple of weeks ago, but she insisted on putting in uppercase, but she's the editor. What could I do about it? Dear R, I found the latest message you sent, but to be honest, I had to search. I know you would be happy that I enjoyed it more than I expected. You know how your world closes in on me too, and I am cobwebbed. Harriet is afraid of government. We are all dented in many ways, and you would expect our abodes to be sacrosanct. But so many of the smaller brothers have yanked us into the matrix. And what I believe was a groove are the dictators we tolerate playing us as puppets with the too many requests to press button one, and then button two, and then listen while Beethoven is spoiled forever. Don't you just love the rigmarole about being recorded for training purposes? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it's for theirs or mine, and being told what their policy is, and all questions answered except why. I'm working again with the old conventions, loving once more the crunch of gravel on the wheel and foot, and the roads converge to the ego place. And I'm in a path that is rutted and only slightly mossed, and with streams of rainwater that carry discharge leave, where honest resin sticks to the fingers and persist. We must learn what unhinged means and from what. I'm getting there. I love Eliot, I suppose everyone in my generation did. I hope all of you have read it. I was teaching it for years, but the kids resisted it for some time. The love song of G.R. for Prufrock being my favourite. So I wrote a reaction to that, as it were, and I picked my own canoe. It was published in Blue Nib there at Christmas. Reading Prufrock. The rain is light now. It drummed on the roof and windows all day, and the fog is cloaking all sense of sense. Beside me, my wife is curled and warm in sleep. Of her, I'll say no more. If she hears of this and doesn't like it, I can say the sensuality of women brought her to mind, and I lost a certain cool after that. What have I to measure out of life? Coffee spoons, smiles, the scuttling of crabs, useless working days, the failure of time, would it be worthwhile even to begin? What may I presume? Be formulated? No, thank you. Nor am I Hamlet, nor am I a prince or a prophet. The rain has gone, another moon. Did Michelangelo want David to look east or west? Does it matter? Mr. Eliot doesn't say or seem to care. He merely throws me into a ditty. Now, Mr. Eliot, those mermaids. Should I be allowed to address you as T.S.? Tom would be undignified and too familiar for the both of us. I saw a mermaid once. It was no fun at all, let me tell you. She didn't sing. Not even once. At least, not to me. I'm old. Old and more than slightly bald. Not interested in parting my hair. Would like a ponytail, even a little one. Just the ones. No trouble to eat a peach. Maybe from a tin. I will continue to wear brown shorts on the beach. Only a few pipe smokers left. The many are vaping, humanoids in great grey clouds, looking wasted. You know that word, don't you, T.S.? Maybe not this usage. I have seen a few proof rock act-alikes out there at the moment of being formulated. Look at what you presume to have begun. Now, they will always be with us. And the rain has returned, insistent this time between you and me. Right. Now at this stage, I would like to thank all of you for coming, especially my friends from Fermoy and from Ultimate Kerry. All the way from Ballyferrick, we have Louis Mulcahy, Bill King, Mick Jones, and the rest of you, and of course, my own family as well. Now, they're actually no help at all to me. They put more pressure on me. I must tell you a joke. I couldn't let you get away without a joke. There was a great poetry reading one night in Renaissance Florence. God, it went on all night. At the end of the evening, the MC said, "We have one more reader." This man went up and says, "Good evening. My name is Dante Alighieri. I just have three things to read." Written on the way to Cork one day on the bus. When you're on the bus, you see a little bit more than you do from the car. I must stay away from cars as much as I can. The bus and other stories. I see the animals in the field, their breath hanging above them. I sense their warmth, their smell, the trust and knowledge in their eyes. To pass the time on this journey, I imagine we're above the road and the world is moving. A feeling enhanced by the live stream of the route ahead on the TV screen that hangs between the no smoking sign and the violent red of the broken clock, showing four stoic lights, two blinking dots, and I feel I have missed much. The car spire on the rocks, the house of our two favourite trees that were felled last week, leaving bereaved stumps. Now, at uncomfortable thought time, another arrives to leave my little cosmos dismayed. If this is life, my life, what else have I missed? Now, I threatened you with one about Rome. I do like to write the occasional travel one. This is called Roma, and I have a little quotation from Ovid. "And besides, we lovers fear nothing." Our room was dingy. The only window looking out on an opening that chimneyed up to a heaven and down to the mouth of Avernus. We pushed the single beds together and were eating a cold pizza and guzzling a welcome bottle of Umbrian Vino Rosso. The hotel was on a via that led to another and yet another, eventually finding its way to the Circus Maximus, where Erler was sat watching the ghosts. Before that, it was a church of ghastly Medusa mules that would turn sinners to stone. Outside, a bejeweled girl in a scanty skirt and a bitty top, her eyes glazed over, spoke with that very emptiness. The wine had brought some analgesia from the discord of scooters on the cobbles. The half-light set dark forms dancing on the walls. In strange phrases, the genie threatened. Still, we were grateful for the welcome and, but troubled, Lethe-like oblivion. Tomorrow, a triumphant trundle to the aeroporto to join the queues for the general judgment and submit our bags and our souls to a particular frisking. Now, I have a little trouble with my hand. I have a little tremor, and it's accentuated by my presence here and in this position. The doctor says it's a benign, involuntary tremor. It definitely is a tremor. It definitely is involuntary. I don't know about it being benign. My eyes have gone their own way. Only Friday last, they showed me a woman get a woman on a woodland path, and then, in the ghost light, metamorphosed her into an ambling form. They often set words to dance in the page, but gems have emerged. The same with my ears. I have listened to and heard too much. Recently, I was rebuked in an antique shop by the owner who intruded into my thoughts. He was reclining on the chaise longue and was peeved I wasn't giving his observations the attention he seemed to imagine they were worth. He apparently considered his dicta of far more import than the ferment of thought I was at that time enjoying. Nurtured by the replicas of classical antiques that graced his establishment, notably a miniature Venus de Milo, which titillated beyond description. I informed him that after so many years, I unilaterally excuse myself of any duty to listen to anyone. Up to now, I had to listen to thunder, and at this moment preferred to imagine Venus and Anchises as they, heedless of myself, lay limbs entwined on a velvet thalamus. Anyway, how could I be sure he was there at all until this tiff with my eyes was resolved? Now, I won't keep you much longer, as Henry VIII said to one of his wives. There's a great legend in Ireland, especially among fishing villages, and also in Scotland, of the man who met and married the sea woman, the Silky. You may have heard it, so I don't know where this one came from, what I was thinking of at the time. I called it the Moonlight Woman. He found her first in the new light that seeped through the house. Nothing was lost, and for a time, much became a glow. They kept each other with slender strings, the puppet masters of true love. They wept salt tears, and in time, their cries became whimpers. She would listen to the trickle of bright water, the foot scurry of animals, the wind whistle in the ruins, tomorrow's birth song in the secret of the bands. They heard the cock crow in the early light. The valley rose and fell with their breathing. Columns of turf smoke rose into an early sky, and again she was minded to go. And the last one. It's called Easy Going, and I suppose it's appropriate enough. The clock in the bedroom hesitated, battery down. It lingered a while, showing the seconds, the minutes, then the days before finally stopping, 12:57, any day you like. On January 1st, there was a brief reincarnation. It ticked its way through a further 50 minutes. its own unfinished business. 50 slow, stress-free minutes. Finally stopped at a time of its own choosing, its face still glowing, 1:46 in the day we make. Thank you very much.
Not hear enough. So we're looking forward to the publication of your book very shortly.
Yeah.